It's time for Supply Chain Now. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia. Heard around the world, Supply Chain Now spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. And now, here are your hosts.
Hey, good afternoon. Scott Luton, Greg White with you here on Supply Chain Now. Welcome to today's episode. Greg, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm excited. I'm not giving this up. Don't worry.
I appreciate
that. I'm excited, and everyone should be looking forward to this. It's solving big problems in top secret until they tell us ways.
We've trained you well, Greg. I appreciate that. Hey, we're going to be talking with two business leaders from a leading global technology company that specializes in smart logistics, right? And get this, Greg, I love the tagline. They're moving the world intelligently. I think we could all steal from that, right? Yeah. Move a little bit more intelligently. We're going to be working hard to increase your supply chain leadership IQ. But hey, quick programming note. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to find us and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from so you don't miss conversations just like this. All right, with no further ado, let's bring in our two featured guests. We're really excited to have Mark Messina, Chief Operating Officer with Geek Plus. Mark, how you doing?
Good, Scott. How are you? Glad to be back. Craig, nice to see you.
Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Yeah, welcome back.
Thank you.
The world had continued to change quite a bit since your last appearance with us last spring. But, you know, on those two episodes earlier in the year, we got a lot of great feedback. And looking forward to sharing your thought leadership with our audience again here today. And you brought a colleague with you, Simon Houghton, Senior Sales and Marketing Manager. Simon, how you doing?
Hey, Scott. How you doing? Hi, Greg.
Hey, welcome.
Welcome indeed. Simon, great to have you and looking forward to sharing your insights and observations with our audience as well. All right. So before we get to the hard stuff, right, all the complexities that y'all are solving out across the global economy and global business landscape, let's get to know you both a little better. So, Mark, we're going to do a refresher with you, but before we do, since Simon is a new guest here on the scene, let's dive into his background first. So, Simon, please share a little bit of your background with our audience.
Hey, Scott. Yeah, so I've been in the supply chain materials handling sector for the last 25, 30 years in different roles, from supplying warehouse automation through to running my own DC. I've worked for large system integrators and racking manufacturers across the last 25, 30 years. So hopefully this experience is useful for me now. So nice to meet you anyway. Cheers, Scott.
You as well, Simon. And so what you're saying is you've seen it all. And I love
that. He knows of what he speaks. Yeah.
I'd say for this year, that's certainly not seen it all. This year's been a first.
Good point. Yeah. Well, looking forward to diving into that a lot more of that here momentarily. And Mark, great to have you back. Again, our listeners enjoyed your previous episodes with us. Let's refresh our audience's memory a bit. Tell us a little about yourself.
So I head up Geek Plus as a COO in North America and actually cover all of the Americas. I've been with the company since late last year. Started up operations here in the States just before the pandemic hit. So it's been a very interesting year. As far as my background goes, I've got 20 years of operations management in engineering, product development, general operations, et cetera, and really have been involved in these types of robotics since about 2013. It's a very exciting space that continues to expand in really interesting ways and is delivering really meaningful changes across the industry and to customers, really noticing the differences in the way that they shop and in some ways live. So it's going to continue to be very interesting times.
Agreed. And so many of those new behaviors are here for the foreseeable, if not a permanent future. So it'd be interesting to see in months ahead. All right. So Greg, we're not going to do the full lightning round with Mark and Simon, but we do have a couple of quick questions to pick their brain a bit. So let's start with you, Mark. Let's stay with you rather. We've all picked up new habits, new hobbies, you name it here in 2020. Maybe sometimes out of for therapeutic purposes and others. But what's one thing that you've done more in 2020 that you really enjoyed?
Well, there's a few things. I mean, 2020 has been personally for me a really frustrating year. I'm looking forward to putting 2020 in the rearview mirror as soon as possible. So for me, the gym, getting back to the gym as soon as it opened up again, mountain biking. We've got some really nice scenic places to mountain bike here in Southern California, and in pier fishing. So, just being outdoors, because normally otherwise we're not able to go shopping and this sort of thing. So you can't really see the normal day-to-day interactions, but just exercise, it helps keep your mind healthy and relieves some, I guess, stress and supplants that normal interaction we have with our coworkers. So.
Well said. Simon, same question to you. What's one thing you're doing more of here in 2020?
Yeah, similar to Mark, really. I think where I live in the UK is on the edge of an area of outstanding national beauty and called the Cotswolds. And just hiking and trailing the area and finding some, well, if they're open, some nice English pubs to have a, certainly over the summer was great, just to sort of explore and walk around a lot. So just getting out in the fresh air and a bit of quality time with nature, I guess.
Love that. Love the pictures y'all are painting visually. Follow-up question, Mark. We're all looking for good, reliable information these days, points of view, you name it. What's a good recent read or what's a source of information you check just about every day?
You know, I'm always following TechCrunch and looking at where startups are going. There's a lot of nascent technologies that are very interesting. So, you know, we've talked about Industry 4.0 for years, and you can follow these trends to see how they become legitimized by what happens in the stock market, right? Are these companies getting traction and who's making acquisitions, who's interested in the technology? So I follow a lot of the tech pages, especially around, you know, 5G starting to make its way into daily lives beyond phone calls, right? And actually into IoT devices. Endpoint devices, you know, we consider our product an IoT product. It's an endpoint device that works from the cloud. So these technologies are what I really have been following. And then, of course, you know, I'm a bit of a political junkie, and so I certainly follow everything this year. It's been an extremely interesting year in many ways. So,
yes, it's like that famous Netflix saga. They went House of Cards lately, it seems like. But hey, I appreciate you sharing. And same question for you, Simon. Before we dive deeper into Geek Plus, Simon, what's a good source of information you lean on?
Yeah, I think following similar to Mark, really. I mean, I certainly live and breathe robotics and the sector. You know, I'm sort of really interested to know what's going on with the marketplace and so on. So regularly checking that. And I suppose outside of that, certainly for the UK, we had Brexit and all the stuff going on, and then COVID, and news has been a constant source of checking daily what's going on. I think probably by the end of this year, I'm getting a little bit fed up with looking at news. So sometimes I try and avoid it, but and outside that, sports, I mean, certainly a big rugby fan in the UK and soccer, I guess, but that's the main things.
Love it. Gotta be able to shut things down and step away and take that breath of fresh air that both of y'all were speaking about earlier. All right, so before I pass the baton to Greg and take a deeper dive into Geek Plus and what all it does, Mark, if you could, you know, I think you were last with us last May or June, you know, certainly in the spring, give us the biggest one or two big developments that have taken place since your last appearance at Geek Plus.
You know, obviously, can't turn a blind eye to what's happening in the world. You know, the pandemic has caused this massive shift to e-commerce. You know, we started this operation in the States in the, you know, really January of 2020. And when the pandemic hit, you know, I literally came back from Asia on the 24th of January, and then really everything kind of hit the fan very shortly after that. So we had some concerns about what would happen to the operations just globally and of course in the States as a new entry into the market here. But the pandemic has really just accelerated the business. You know, we have seen demand and we've had dialogue with customers that's been extremely interesting. Our partners and customers, they want to see proposals very quickly. They're really looking at how quick can they get the technology. You know, are they looking at brownfield? Are they looking at greenfield? So, you know, I think the biggest advances for us are really our business has accelerated in ways we didn't expect. And then, of course, to support that, we've set up a lot of channel partners. So we have some very meaningful channel partners now who we are developing. We've set up our agreements. We continue to do that. And we are now developing those partners so that they can be self-sustaining to manage our product.
Fantastic, Mark. Appreciate that. All right. So, Greg, let's dive a little deeper.
Yeah. So share with us a little bit more about what you do, obviously robotics, as you said, but how that's positioned in the supply chain and who maybe some of your customers or not, what type of customers you have, whatever you can share with us about who uses the kind of technology that you provide.
So just a brief overview of Geek Plus and some of our, what we're known for, and then we'll talk about what we're, some of the things that we're working on. That's a,
yeah,
exciting. You know, Geek Plus has been around since 2015, late 2014. We've got, you know, we're well known for our goods to person robots. You can see one of the racks behind me. These robots are, you know, really sort of the bread and butter for the company. We have always worked on a sales model. So we sell the devices and the racks and everything and deploy them all. But more and more, we've expanded our platform. So now we have sorting robots. We have fork trucks. We have pallet movers. We have moving robots. So we cover everything from what we're well known for, which is serving e-com and apparel space and pharma, to covering smart factories. As a matter of fact, our robots are built in our own owned and operated factory that uses our robots for all the intra-factory logistics, and our software actually controls a variety of other peripherals within the factory. So we have six-axis robots that do screwing operations and assembly operations. These are all controlled from our integrated platform. You know, these are some of the things that we're maybe not so well known for. As we mature as a company, we're moving now from Wi-Fi based devices to devices that are 5G enabled, so we can leverage a direct connection to the cloud. We're moving to well-known cloud platforms to build trust with our customers so that we're on a platform that they know and trust, that they've lived with for a long time, whether that's, you know, an AWS cloud or an Azure cloud, so that we can give them a high degree of confidence in their data security. And at the same time, we offer the ability to optimize the operations of the systems with the learnings we get matter to our system and the optimizations that we can develop and then propagate that out so efficiencies are shared. Now, typically this is like a bit of a concern for our customers, right? So one of the things that we reiterate is every customer implementation is a fingerprint. And it's kind of interesting because while the hardware thing, you know, you may have server racks, workstations, pods, robots on the floor at a site, every customer business operation and the implementation of the software that runs their system is entirely different. So the fingerprint that runs that operation for customer A is entirely different than customer B. That fingerprint is always intact and respected, but the optimizations that we achieve through our machine learning and AI, we can propagate that out, which makes us a lot more valuable and makes the system a lot more valuable to the customer. And this is something that as we mature as a company becomes extremely important.
There's three things there that really stand out to me, Mark. And one is you are embracing sort of the new ERP, which is the cloud platform, mm-hmm. right? Because that has become a religious thing, just like this ERP versus that ERP kind of thing. And embracing that is not something I had really thought about, but that's pretty visionary to position yourselves so that your customers, no matter where they consider home, their cloud home, they can work with you. And additionally, that you eat your own dog food is really important. What better way? I mean, seriously, what better way to understand how your systems operate in a real world environment than to inflict the joys and pains of that real world environment on yourself? It really drives that home, I'm sure, for your product management and development people.
Absolutely. You know, we have on that point, you know, in addition to our own owned and operated factory, which is this kind of a playground for engineers, and it really gives us the ability to develop parts of the system that we wouldn't otherwise consider if we didn't have to deal with that reality, right? And that means developing solutions, but also solving a lot of problems. We also have our own owned and operated 3PL distribution centers in Asia. So we see firsthand what it's like to deal with customers, you know, goods intake, everything from entry all the way to shipment. We're dealing with that and having to deal with customers who are angry when it's not working, just like our customer 3PLs in the States and other places would have to deal with. So it's absolutely, I think, one of the key pieces to our success is we actually deal with this stuff on our own. We don't just sell the product. We work with the product.
Wow. I mean, there is kind of a lot to unpack there, but I got to tell you from a purely culture standpoint, I really, I really like where you all have positioned yourself. It's a bold move to use your own technology to run your business.
Yeah, no, it is. But even going beyond that, you know, the adoption of 5G, we look ahead to, you know, what is the future in the next, you know, 5 to 8 years. Adopting 5G and cloud compute are really, really key to go beyond where we are today. We have a mandate to be the world leader in logistics robotics. And we look at key technologies that are just, we believe are absolutely necessary to get there. So the technologies, I think plenty of other companies say you don't have to adopt these. You can proceed. I don't think you can be a leader without adopting these technologies. And we feel this, we see the same with our, what I would call early adopters in our market, especially in the Americas. The market tends to have, in my opinion, a bit of a herd mentality where, you know, all of the market looks and says, oh, there's a new technology over there. But nobody really wants to adopt it because there's so much visibility within their own operation that if they adopt this new technology and it doesn't work as well as what they're very comfortable with, they can be, you know, drawn and quartered for this. So when we get the early adopters, you know, we really go out of our way to listen and take care of them and make sure that the investment they've made in us pays off for them. And it's the same thing with adopting new technology. You know, as scary as it is for our customers to adopt our technology or any new technology, not just ours, you know, we are very thoughtful about what we adopt, but we have very high confidence that moving forward, really AI and machine learning, the benefits don't show up unless you adopt these technologies. So this is key for us.
Yeah, I think you're right. Well, okay, so let's ask the new guy, Mark. So, Simon, you're relatively new to Geek Plus, and you come from another aspect of the business, right? The more physical, I don't know if you would necessarily say manual side, but not nearly as automated as pure robotics from your history at Dematic. So first off, let people know what it is you do today at Geek Plus, and then I'd love to hear your perspective on some of what Mark has shared and what you've seen in your time at Geek Plus.
Yeah, so my role obviously is in the title, Senior Sales and Marketing, but essentially it's developing Geek's business in the UK and Ireland. And did do a little bit in Spain last year as well, because I speak Spanish as well. But essentially, it's to building the business over here. And I think going on from what Mark was saying as well, I mean, our philosophy at Geek Plus is to look at a warehouse or look at a site. And if there's a lot of manual operators going in the site, and typically a manual operator could spend 50% of his day walking or in transit, so he's driving a truck and walking up and down the aisles, that for us is an opportunity to help with robotics. And can we eliminate that time and allow it to become more productive at the end of the day? And I think with the challenges we talked about with COVID this year, and there's potentially more orders need to be processed because it's going towards piece picking via e-com versus case picking for store. There's more orders to be produced. Effectively, you would, on a manual operation, you'd need more people to do that. And of course, with social distancing, you can't get more people in right. The site. This is one of the daily challenges I have talking with customers and looking at the site. And we do the walk around from inbound through to storage to outbound, looking at all those processes and can we help? You know, this is what we're looking to do. We're looking to help, and you know, how can we help them improve their operation? And it doesn't always necessarily mean massive reductions in headcount, or that could, you know, sometimes it's an issue. The customer needs to reduce costs. Sometimes it's using the existing team, but needing to produce 3, 4, 5 times the number of orders in the same time frame, and you can do that with robotics. So it's really, in a nutshell, that's what I'm doing. I'm problem solving. I'm talking to big e-com retailers, distribution centers to look at solving their problems, really, and with a fresh approach with robotics.
You mentioned it, Simon, so I'm going to dig a little bit deeper, and that is that both of you have really mentioned this, and this is that the world has changed maybe forever, but certainly e-commerce and the impact of that in society has surged upwards at a basically now probably more than double rate of the previous growth rate. And it's believed that a lot of that e-commerce demand will stick as well, which only increases the need for the automation that both of you have talked about. Also, I mean, not to mention the conditions you've already talked about with social distancing and that sort of thing. These are not highly sought after jobs, having done business in retail and e-commerce and with technology suppliers or providers to this marketplace. I'm aware that it's not easy to find people to fill these slots. And as the newer generations get into the marketplace, they are less likely to do these types of jobs. So what you're doing is becoming ever more important. And companies are adapting rapidly. Obviously, they've been shocked by this seismic societal disruption. And as you both said, to some extent, their need requirement really is to deploy extremely rapidly. So can you tell us a little bit about how that's impacted maybe your company's demand, and also how you implement your technologies and how you manage to do so rapidly in this ever-changing marketplace?
A lot of our customers really, really appreciate when we start our discussions, at some point early on in the discussion, they want to know how quick they can get the technology, because as soon as they hear the value proposition and the efficiency, then almost, you know, right away the question is, well, how long does it take to get the system? And so, you know, we're deploying anywhere between 3 to 6 months to stand up a full system. And we're working right now to shorten that by bringing supply chain to North America so that we can serve the market even faster and with more reactivity. Mm. So, you know, this is very different from what they're hearing when they talk about setting up a full scale, what I call a heavy iron DC, where you've got a lot of the legacy technologies that are fixed to the floor. It comes to efficiency. When you talk about speed to market, pretty much everything about Geek Plus is about efficiency. If you really boil it down, right, we're a company that is largely based on efficiency. And we have, you know, our staff is about 900 people. Half of that is engineers. Engineers are by nature people who strive for efficiency in almost everything they do. And it shows up in our product. It shows up in our process. Anyway, yeah, time to market for us shows up for our customers 3 to 6 months for the majority of deployments from the time that we sign a PO is typical. And this is accretive to their ROI because they're getting the efficiencies that we deliver that much sooner. And the flexibility, you know, we can kind of dive deeper into this, because when you get this system, in addition to standing it up faster, one of the reasons you stand it up faster is because it's a very flexible system that's not bolted to the floor. So there's much less risk in adopting such a system, because when we bring the system up, normally, you know, we're seeing from the time that it goes live until maybe a month and a half after, the system is learning and it's optimizing. And you see these increases in the efficiency, but this continues as your operations change. And the name of the game with our customers right now is uncertainty. They don't know what's going to happen with their product lineup. They don't know what their SKU mix is going to be. They have no idea what their volumes are going to be. I mean, they can make some guesses, but as we've seen this year, they're guesses, right? And everybody's predictions have been blown out of the water every which way. And when you have a system that, like, literally you just pour more of it into the system, right? Oh, we just need to top it off with more robots and we increase the efficiency, or we get back into that peak efficiency zone, you know, as opposed to the traditional systems where you've got an 18-month stand up and you've bolted everything to the floor. And if you want to add a buffer conveyor somewhere, it's major surgery. It's ridiculously expensive. It interrupts your whole operation, and it's never optimized because the system is very inflexible, right? So again, it's about efficiency.
It's obsolete by the time you get it installed if you're using what you call heavy iron, right?
In today's economy, that's true. It really is true, and it can be very painful. And so we've seen that as a major driver in the conversations that we've had, is that our clients are coming to us and saying, our system is completely tapped out. no matter what we do to it, we can't get it to work in with what we're seeing today. We don't want to face this again in the future, that we've invested all this time and money in a system, and yet once again, here we are painting it into a corner.
We've talked a lot about 2020 and how things have changed. And Simon, I'm interested, you know, honestly, I'm impressed and enthused by Mark, how much knowledge you have of the real life problems that your customers are facing every day and how engaged you are and how you all are doing it. But Simon, you're squarely in the crosshairs of the customers, right? So I'm really interested in, if you think about 2020 and this, as some people have called it, constant peak season of 2020 and the coming peak season of the holidays and all of the other changes and disruptions, including this mass exodus to e-commerce. Tell us a little bit about how that's impacted your clients and how that's impacted how you deal with your clients and what their expectations are.
Yeah, I think the conversations I'm having sort of almost daily or weekly with them is a lot of them now are expecting the unexpected. Now they don't know what's around the corner. And all of them need and want to be prepared to be flexible and scalable, that the business has got to adapt and move with the times. And I don't think anyone knows what's going to happen in 3 or 6 months. And going back to Mark's point about and having sold traditional mechanical automation, you know, those sort of systems, if I was been putting one in today, I would have been talking about it two or three years ago for that project, and you'd be signing. So, and it's designed around one site and one set of numbers, which right now will probably be totally different. And how do you cope with that? And I think with the robotics, I think what we've, with the shorter lead times, that the lead times Mark mentioned are sort of 3 to 6 months, probably for a first system. But when you get to the stage where you're topping up robots, that's much, much quicker. And we're talking weeks. You know, if you've designed, got that initial planning right, more or less, to, for that flexibility around the site, or you've got space to add in more QR codes effectively to add more storage or more stations for more throughput, then it's a really quick process. And so what I've been, I mean, typical example with one of our major customers, we started with them 2 years ago, and we started with like a toe in the water proof of concept. And we're about to go live with them end of this year with a 500 plus robot installation. So, you know, the I would say to take from that, the earlier you start trials with robotics, the better. Get your business used to it, get adapted, and very quickly you'll see the benefits of the flexibility and the scalability of the systems.
Hey, real quick, Simon, if I could ask a quick follow-up question on that customer you mentioned, 500 robots. Is that, to the non-robotics expert that I am, is that a big solution? Is that a mid-sized solution? Is that a smaller solution?
That would be a big one for us, although I've just heard recently that we're probably closing a door for 600 robots, but typically most solutions would be 20 to 100, I would say. This is talking like goods-to-person picking, but bear in mind these sort of solutions could easily be, you know, replacing, sort of, you know, reducing it down to 5-10 people in the picking operation, going down from 50 or 60 or 100, you know, annual operation. So although it sounds like a lot of robots, the return on investment is normally very, very quick on these systems. So it's certainly quite an easy sell for us in that perspective.
Yeah, our different markets have different capacity for robotics, right? So in North America, we see that this would be, you know, 500 robots would be about what we would expect per floor, but a DC may have 4 floors per implementation. So a particular site might have, you know, in the 1500 to 2000 AGVs. And now we're combining this together. So when you look at, again, back to flexibility and efficiency, when you look at a system of that scale, there's a lot of ancillary support that you can never really get away from, right? So you still need conveyor, some level of conveyor. However, you know, we have no illusion that we'll completely kill conveyor, but we do have, you know, our sorting robots now integrate with our picking robots as well as our shuttle robots. And we can reduce labor further by taking labor out of the equation between our shuttle robots and our sorting robots using vision-based bin picking. So we have the ability to further reduce labor, but also when you look at the amount of, you know, it's a lot about density. Everything is about density, especially we haven't even talked about micro-fulfillment. As we get into micro-fulfillment, density is king, but pretty much anywhere density and efficiency are king. So there's a lot of space and a lot of trepidation around bolting conveyor to the floor, because once it's bolted down to the floor, there's a lot of dead space for egress and access and service and blah, blah, blah. And it's not, again, it's not flexible. Our sorting robots, which you can see one of them behind me, you know, these things, again, you just pour in more robots, you get more sorts per hour, right? And so we're good to about 15,000 sorts per hour with that technology. It's very, again, it's very flexible. So the concern that if I was director of operations in an FC and saying, hey, you know, we're going live with this building we designed 3 years ago, in this economy, I'd be extremely concerned. I'd be really concerned. But if I had the flexibility of a system where the floor is never changes, right? We don't have to bolt anything down. We just update the program, and now we've got 15 different dock doors that we didn't have before, and all that extra capacity, and we poured in an extra 600,000 square feet worth of capacity. Well, you know, I'm sleeping well at night.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, you know, if there's anything that we've learned, it's that the past is no indication of future success. And, you know, even the thought of, I mean, it sent shudders down my spine when each of you said you're implementing something you've been planning for the last 3 years. I just can't imagine where an organization is if that is the case, and where you can literally replan the floor on a day-to-day basis seems like table stakes to me at this point. So, okay, so both of you obviously are hearing a lot from your clients. I'm curious, what are the big lessons learned, or what are the, you've mentioned some of the concerns that some of your clients have, but what are the big lessons learned, or what is there one thing that you have taken away from your clients that you think would be really helpful to other retailers and distributors and 3PLs out there as they go into holiday peak season? We're going to have to qualify it now, aren't we, Scott? We can't just call it peak. Now it's holiday peak, because there's always a peak in something.
Right. Or as we were talking before right. We went on, it's been peak all year, it feels, for many organizations. So, but yeah, Mark, if you want to take that question first, you know, what are you hearing? What are some of your observations as it relates to this constant peak?
You know, in terms of what we would tell prospective or future customers, like what would be one key thing? I suppose it's mostly that what worked in the past, you can be comfortable with it, but it's not efficient. It's not going to work well in the future. And in order to compete in this market, right, the competition requires that you be extremely, like, viciously efficient in your operations. So when you look at a fixed system, you really can't ignore that it's not hard to bottleneck that system. And so it's very easy to see the flexibility and the payoff of that flexibility. Now, it does require that you take some brave steps within your organization to adopt a new technology. And so, you know, what Simon mentioned is do a proof of concept early and make it a meaningful proof of concept. You know, we're happy to do, you know, the analysis and get everything stood up virtually and do our simulations, et cetera. But that doesn't help the leaders in the organization sell that technology to the rank and file who have to deal with using that technology, and who often are the ones who are most saying, you know, we're afraid of adopting something new because we have to deal with it. And once you've bought it and it doesn't work, sure, you can walk away from it, but we have to live with it. So doing a meaningful POC, and more importantly, come visit one of our sites, right? Come out and take a look and bring an entourage and have a look, because when you see these systems working, it becomes, like, you know, painfully obvious the value.
something I'll get you to weigh in here, because we're going to talk about the bullwhip effect and a real popular blog article that your team released a few days ago, I believe. But Simon, what are some of the things that you're hearing? What are some things you would share with either a prospective customer of yours or a business leader that's just working through these peak volumes?
I think what I'm seeing every day is certainly the forerunners and the successful businesses, especially in e-com, are analyzing with a microscope every single part of the process of their business, right from inbound, unloading the truck, getting the stock into the system. How are they doing that? How does the stock is then picked? You know, can that be automated? And then once it's picked, how's it routed to the pack area? How's it packed? You know, there's automation for packing, a lot of automation for packing now. And then even how it's loaded on the truck and looking at every single process. So, you know, Geek has solutions for a lot of those areas, and where we don't, we work with companies which do have those solutions as well. So we'll work with integrators and to help integrate the full solution. So really from that end-to-end process, that's you've got to look at that now to improve efficiencies. And you know, with the growth in e-com, the number of orders growing to process, but not only that, the consumer are more demanding. You know, we want, I don't know about the US, but in certain businesses in the UK, you can be sat on your iPad at night and 10, 11 o'clock at night and get it the next day, even same day. And as consumers, we want more of that. And I tend to drift towards sites now where I can get it quicker. And business, you want that, and you want, you know, so not only are there more e-com orders to process, people want them quicker. So the only way to get that is through automation and flexible and scalable automation, which is I think why we're here and why things are growing so quickly.
So I'm not sure if it was Mark or Simon that coined this phrase vicious efficiency, but that's what's in demand to meet these vicious consumer demands that we've all been kind of spoiled with. But I also like what both of you are also speaking to, which seems to be a big part of the cultural DNA at Geek Plus, is you can't rest on your laurels, not for a single minute, and take anything for granted because of just, you know, how demanding the consumer is, how the market conditions are continuing to evolve. And in some cases, as we've all seen, putting a spotlight on or these blind spots we didn't even know were there, were rearing their ugly heads. So, but really appreciate y'all sharing a lot about the Geek Plus value proposition and what you do. Let's shift gears. Earlier this year, as we all know, all four of us probably were real familiar with the bullwhip effect long before 2020, but many consumers, and Greg, we got the question about 1,000 times from local media and others, mm-hmm. Tell us about what's going on with toilet paper. You know, tell us about this bullwhip effect we're hearing about. So one of the silver linings here is that consumers are becoming more, as you know they would, becoming much more informed, much more aware of what goes on with global supply chain. But Simon, I want to pose this question because we came across this blog that's been well consumed out in industry, and Geek Plus is offering its tips on 5 guidelines for minimizing that bullwhip effect in your business. So Simon, at a very high level, and we'll include a link in the show notes for our listeners, but Simon, at a high level, and Mark, maybe you provide color commentary, walk us through those 5 guidelines, if you would, Simon.
Yeah, sure. So obviously we know the effect of these slight changes in demand from the consumer can have a ripple effect all right the way up through to manufacturing and across the supply chain. And I think certainly some guidelines which we suggest to increase visibility and collaboration and communication right across the stakeholders within that chain. So lots more information sharing, you know, whether it be sort of noticing of certain trends from the retailer's perspective, report that back up through to distribution and to the manufacturing, outstanding inventory across the distribution and the manufacturing side of things. Effective communication, really, and sharing of that information across all the areas, really. So that's certainly the first point I would say.
Simon, real quick. So what you're suggesting is that here in the information age, that we share it. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. Right. Imagine across the supply chain. Yeah. It doesn't always happen, and I think the more the retailers communicate their experience to their distributors and they and then to the manufacturers, the better really. And that's going up and down the chain. The more they communicate, the more the possibilities of reducing that effect effectively of bullwhip. So I would say a second point really as well is to, and we've talked about this already, but really consider investments in automation and software to help really optimize and streamline the processes across the supply chain. So that could be anything from raw material planning, inventory planning and management, demand planning, managing supplier relationships. I mean, for example, one of the retailers we're working with has adopted sort of deep robotic sortation system to streamline their e-commerce business, and they've seen huge accelerated shifts towards e-commerce, and they've had obviously the challenges of the growth in number of orders to be processed. The demand has been unpredictable from one day to the next, and they've suffered from labor shortages and high requirements for the safer operations as well, you know, on the sites themselves. So this basically automation on the sorting helped them really improve efficiency, reduce costs and accuracy. I would say a third point, another one to bear in mind as well is really reevaluate the sort of safety stock settings, the minimum maximums of stocks, the range of inventory. Obviously we're seeing huge changes and huge shifts, so look at those again against each SKU and make adjustments if necessary, and perhaps consider more of a regular reporting on that analysis, and look at tools like early warning systems to help evaluate some of that those changes. A fourth point I would say would be to look at that supply chain and try and reduce lead times and delays. And it's not always easy, especially with today's marketplace, but really to work with suppliers, looking at reducing those lead times. I mean, take an example from the automotive industry with just-in-time types of ordering, you know, trying to get the stuff as quick as possible really will help. Help process things quicker. Also things like the business is basically considered to ship multiple types of items per truck, you know, looking at the logistics side of things, really just trying to improve those lead times and delays. And I'd say probably the last point as well would be to look at order sizes. Don't bulk buy necessarily, you know, look at reducing order sizes. It may help the whole market respond better to the market activity with more speed and more versatility. And rather than maybe offering frequent promotional discounts, retailers could obviously cause distortions in demand, just look towards maybe a standard low prices or everyday low prices model for certain items. So I'd say probably the 5 points we consider to help with the bullwhip effect.
Love that. Stability is I think it's got a whole new sense of appreciation and value here as we move into 2021.
If people even remember it, right? Does anyone remember stability?
Right. Mark, weigh in, offer which steps of those maybe are most critical, or just a couple of observations you've had about companies that have been able to successfully mitigate that bullwhip effect.
You know, it's... I think the key to note here is global supply chain is a very complex thing, right? We're affected by international law. We're affected by obviously customer demand, but we're affected by communication, uncertainties in supply, whether it's with raw materials or whether it's in logistics issues. So global supply chain in and of itself is a whole topic, right? And I think the customer really doesn't appreciate the incredible amount of communication and collaboration that goes on behind the scenes to deliver something to them same day, right? I've had the fortune of working in factories for my whole 20-year career, and I've seen some amazing factories, and understand very well and love very well the whole supply chain process. I mean, it's fascinating and something that's very dear to me, seeing something go from a raw material that comes out of the ground to something that lands on your door and all the steps in between. Again, consumers, especially I think American consumers, have very little appreciation for the amount of effort and the amount of really minds and engineering that goes into that whole thing. So, you know, companies that manage this well look at this holistically. And I think that there are obviously some key players, which I won't mention by name, who do this very well. Logistics, you know, our component of it is certainly a piece of it. And one of the things that we can add to that is rich data that you get from our system. And that's one of the benefits and one of the drivers in our move to the cloud and harmonizing our operations on the cloud so that each customer is not an island unto themselves. It's something that we look at. How do we leverage that data without jeopardizing the customer's operational data and keeps their competitive edge what it is for themselves?
And that goes directly to point one, which is that transparency. I mean, by collecting and making available that data, even if it's just internally, there's incredible efficiencies, vicious efficiencies that can be created within a company. And then those same efficiencies can be created between companies. Yeah, I think that's a really great observation.
Well said. And I like harmony. Yeah. Harmonization is one of my favorite supply chain terms. It just, when your operation can sing cohesively in an aligned fashion, so much
Daryl
power
Lou
there.
Would love that, Mark.
Yes, Daryl. Well, you know, Mark and Simon, so much to tackle. I mean, it's amazing as I'm gathering your observations in what you do day in and day out. Y'all are a lot better at math than I was coming up through school, but just the amount of complexity and at the scale and at the speed that's part of daily life at Geek Plus, it really is impressive. And Mark, I want to echo what you shared about manufacturing. It's nothing less than a miracle of just how everything takes place. And you're right. We're hoping what we've seen, at least, is one of the silver linings to this tough year, 2020, is there's a lot more awareness and, even better yet, appreciation for the folks that make that happen throughout end-to-end supply chain. So appreciate y'all's comments here. Let's make sure, Greg, that our listeners can connect both with Mark and Simon. Mark, let's start with you. How can our listeners connect with you and Geek Plus?
Well, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, just Mark Messina on LinkedIn, or you can always visit our website, www.geekplus.com.
All right, Simon, same question. How can folks connect with you?
Yeah, same as Mark. So LinkedIn is always a good one for me. So Simon Houghton, that's Houghton. And then via the website, so geekplus.com, both good ways to get hold of us.
Outstanding. Of course, we'll include those links in the show notes. We're trying to offer our listeners a one click to reach our audience and find more good information. And I would add, y'all check out the blog articles that Geek Plus publishes. Good stuff there. All right. So Greg, before we wrap, I want to, I shared a couple of my favorite things that we've heard from Simon and Mark through the conversation today. But what's one thing that you think our listeners maybe should really feel if they forget everything else, you know, because we were all talking pre-show about just how much time we have these days to absorb good information. But Greg, what's that one key thing that you think our listeners should take away from this?
Do it now. That's the one key thing that they need to think about it, because it's not just the big river in South America that you need to worry about. It's a big company in Arkansas and a big company in China, and they're coming for you. In fact, they don't even have any regard for you. So if you want to remain relevant, if you want to be efficient enough, viciously efficient, then give it a try. I mean, I'm serious. You need to be thinking about changing something dramatically right now. Mm. And that is the biggest takeaway. And I love that term, vicious efficiency, because that's what the big competitors have. That's what they're after. And vicious is the key word there. So you have to arm yourself as your enemy is armed. So get it done. That's the takeaway. And if you can do it in 3 to 6 months, and I know that Mark and the team are working on even less, man, start now. Be ready for next, whatever the next peak is.
Come on out and visit us. We'll show you the system so you can see it firsthand, and then you can see, you'll understand right away.
I'll just say one other point to that as well. The having sold traditional mechanical automation, the entrance fee to get into automation with robotics is a lot less. So, you know, if you maybe discounted automation in the past because of huge potential costs, it's not what it used to be. So consider that as well. I think that's quite a key part.
Appreciate it. Great point, Simon. Mark and Simon, y'all see that no one throws a gauntlet down quite like Greg White does here at the end of the interview, but there's so much truth there. There's no time to sit back and rest on your laurels at this point, especially here in the information age with the speed of change, the speed of competition in this global economy. So really appreciate our conversation today. As always, Mark, it was great to have you back. Mark Messina, COO with Geek Plus. And thanks so much for bringing your colleague, Simon Houghton, Senior Sales and Marketing Manager with Geek Plus as well. Mark, Simon, thanks so much.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We'll see you again soon. All right. So Greg, really great conversation as always. Really, I feel like I've gained like a robotics certification after the last hour here. You know, there's so much good information here, but hopefully our listeners enjoyed it as much as we did. And if you do, to our audience, if you did enjoy this conversation, you can find out a lot more just like them at supplychainnow.com. On that note, you know, on behalf of Greg White and Scott Luton, the whole team here at Supply Chain Now, hey, do good. Give forward, be the change that's needed, and we'll see you next time here on Supply Chain Now. Thanks, everybody.